Good morning, everybody. We want to offer you an enthusiastic welcome to Daylight Saving Time and to our meeting on this Lord's Day morning. We're very grateful that the Lord blesses us with an opportunity to be together at the beginning of a week to remember what our lives are about. And we're grateful that that privilege is reinforced by the presence of those of like precious faith. We're really glad to be together this morning. We've been thinking our way through the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. And we are at the last paragraph of the sermon itself, though we'll have one more study in this series. And I've asked Scott this morning just to leave in front of us the title for this study and the scripture passage, and to ask you to use your imagination today, because I think that's what the Lord does, what He asks of all of us in this text. While we're imagining, let's note that none of us can imagine any meaningful relationship in which one person in the relationship talks about things really important to his or her heart, and the other person simply evaluates how he or she did in the presentation. What if it is a wife, we'll say, who pours her heart out to her husband over something which is really important to her, some strong opinion or some real struggle in her life, something that the husband's behavior is going to have an impact on, and he listens, and then he comments, "You know, you told me that better than you probably ever have." And then he just goes and does exactly like he had been before. Do you suppose that relationship would be headed for trouble? What if it's a parent who is offering some kind of essential guidance for life to a son or a daughter? And it's done with great conviction, and it's one of these heart-to-heart type talks, a serious matter. And when the parent has said what is to be said to that young man or young woman, the young person said, "Dad, you did a really good job of telling me that." And then the young person went off and completely ignored it in practical sense in life. You see what I mean? That's not really thinkable, is it? And even less so is it something we can imagine when the Lord is telling His own disciples, those who are supposed to be learning how to live from Him, then how to live. He's been telling us that all through the Sermon on the Mount. We soon see that His eloquence is not the issue. The effectiveness of our living is. And so what about the one who hears? I've chosen this title. This is a way the New English Bible starts this. What then of the man who hears? That's the way this little paragraph starts. Jesus answers the question with a parable, which is so simple that our children sing it. The wise man built his house on the rock, you remember. The foolish man builds his house. And we remember how the rains come down and the floods come up and the rest of the song. And yet this little paragraph is so profound in its application that it shakes a thoughtful person awake to reality and challenges us. Anything with the capacity to comfort us has to be strong enough to challenge us. And this is a paragraph like that. Matthew 7, starting at verse 24. Jesus said, Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall, because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. All right, let's use our imaginations now and think about what the Lord says here. Notice that what we have is an illustration that says something important to us about how life works by means of two groups of people who are imagined. And these two groups have similarities, but they also are contrasted. They're different in some important ways. On the one hand, Jesus says that everyone in this picture that he's imagining with us is alike in some important ways. And I'll mention three of them that I notice here. In the first place, all of them are hearers. Everyone in this group are hearers. Everyone who hears these words of mine is the common phrase in verse 24 and verse 26. If you go back to Matthew 5, verses 1 and 2, you remember that Jesus gathered his disciples before him and started saying these things or teaching these things to them. And now it's the all right, what are we going to do about this time? He pictures not how he has done as a teacher, but what they're going to be like as hearers. Second, they're all alike in that they are all imagined as building houses. Every hearer is like someone who is building a house. Maybe this is something a carpenter like Jesus would have known about in that region around the Sea of Galilee. It is said that in the low places in that land, either around the lake or in some of the ravines or valleys, during the summertime of the year, the ground would get just hard. It'd be baked hard, solid, it would seem like. But a carpenter knew that in the wintertime, that was all going to change. When the seasonal rains came, and when they washed along one of those low places, or when the water raised, it was going to be revealed of whether a person had taken the time as a builder to get down to rock to have a foundation for what he was constructing. Every hearer is imagined here like that. And then another thing that they all have in common is that every house will be eventually beat upon by storms. The way Jesus phrases this is not with an if. It's not if this will happen, but when. Not even the best builder of the best house will face only fair and sunny weather as time goes along. Jesus does not say, if you will do what I have been telling you in this sermon, your life is going to be, it's going to be a pleasure all the way through. It will be so much fun. It will be something that you will enjoy every single minute. What he does say is, you are building a house by the way you live, and I can guarantee you that you'll face storms. But I'm telling you how to live so that your house can stand. One of the old writers, F.F. Bruce, uses a phrase here about life. It's rain on roof, river on foundations, wind on walls. That's a pretty realistic way of imagining the situation. Now, on the other hand, these two groups in this picture, there are two groups here, have significant differences as well. And the lesson is made in these differences, considering the fact that we also have some things in common. First difference is that one house falls when the storm falls on it, and the other stands though the storm falls on it. One falls when the other stands though the storm falls on it. Now don't pass too quickly over what the Lord's saying here. He's saying there is a way to build so that the house is sure to stand no matter what the storm is. That's a pretty important statement. That's a significant claim, isn't it? The idea that there is a way to live so that your life can stand against what comes. People are looking everywhere for some sort of guarantee, some sort of an answer to that problem. The second difference is that one house is, I'm kind of starting at the end and looking back here, one house is built on the sand, the other on the rock. So the whole picture here depends on the matter of location and foundation. In Matthew's account, the accent seems to be on the location. In Luke's version of this, in Luke chapter 6, it seems to be the fact that the man takes the time to dig down and to really be careful about the foundation. Either one, though, tells us that whether it's founded on the rock becomes the question of where the destiny of the house or the life is being determined. Now the third difference here, one house is a product of foolishness, and the other is the construction of wisdom. The New English Bible I mentioned says, "What then of the man who hears and does these words of mine? He'll be like a man who has sense enough to found his house on the rock." That's how it said, sense enough. That's the idea. In the Lord's picture, the short-sighted and the shallow is swept away by life. And that which has depth and substance remains unmoved, like we've been singing. From Jeremiah 17 and verse 8, by the way, that person who trusts the Lord and makes the Lord his trust is like a tree planted by the water, and that he won't be moved. Now the fourth difference here between these two groups is that one hears the words of the Lord and does not do them. The other hears these words of Christ and makes a habit of doing them. This is really the bottom line in this little parable. It's what it's about. This is the issue, whether we will put the teaching of Jesus into action, into practice in our lives, or whether we'll read it as literature and think about it as a curiosity and go off and do what we wanted anyhow. That's the question. And Jesus' sayings here have their impact in view of that. I'm a hearer. If I hear, I'm a builder. If I'm a builder, then I'm going to face storms. So am I going to stand or not? Am I building on the sand or the rock? Am I acting with good sense or foolishly? Am I doing what I've heard the Lord say, or am I not? Those are the ways in which this passage outlines itself before us. Now, I think it's appropriate in concluding this series to observe that there are some implications in the form of questions that the Lord wants me to resolve for myself when I've heard Him say the things that I've heard Him say in the Sermon on the Mount. And so I pose them for myself in four questions here, and I want to just invite you to join me in thinking about the answers to these. The first one is, having worked all the way through this, if you're wondering, this is the 17th paragraph as we've taken them, as we've studied along. There have been a mixture of topics and really important things. So first, have I considered deeply enough that I am building a house I have to live in? That I'm constructing a life and a character and a destiny that's going to be my home. Have I thought about that enough, or am I just, it's taking a day at a time to me? Does that just mean not ever even really thinking about this kind of a thing? I read the story of a man who gave his grown son, a whole bunch of money. I don't remember the amounts. I'm just going to say $1 million. Under the condition that the boy spend the money on two houses. One of the houses he could only live in a year. The other house he had to live in the rest of the time. Now, what would have been the wise thing to do if you were in possession of that opportunity? Where would you have invested the bulk of the funds at your disposal? Think about life that way. Clovis Chapel years ago made this observation. We're all building all the time, whether wisely or foolishly. We're building by everything that we do. We're building by every thought that we think. We're building by every word that we speak, every dream that we dream, every picture that we hang on the walls of our imagination, every ambition that we cherish. I think he's right. We're take his view of hanging every picture that we're hanging on our wall, every ambition that we cherish. Those are the kinds of things that make a life. Now, think about it in view of what Jesus has been teaching us in the Sermon on the Mount. These kinds of things necessarily become habits. Think about the disposition reflected in the Beatitudes, the temperament of a person. Then consider the anger, the lust, the honesty, the vows. Think of how we treat our enemies, how we respond to the demands that are placed upon us. Consider our religious devotion, the things that we do as spiritual activities, and whether we do them for God or for other people to see, how we pray and so forth. Consider our treasures, our anxieties, the judgments we make of other people and what they intended, what we do with what's holy, whether we can practice the golden rule and so forth. If those things are attended to as principles of life, they have to become a part of you, your normal lifestyle, your everyday practice. Is that what's happening with me? Is that who I really am? I think Jesus wants me to answer that question because he says this will make a life, and it'll make a life that'll be at home in the kingdom of heaven. Pretty important, isn't it? Think of the second question now that I raise as I try to apply this to myself. Do I believe that doing what Jesus says is the foundation for a life that will stand? In other words, do I think things really work like he says they do? I guess I'm really asking, do I believe in him? You know, Jesus insists that these teachings of his, doing these things, is the foundation. It's not the strength of the storm or the skill of the builders or the quality of the material that'll make the difference. The foundation that'll support a life and a soul, according to Jesus, is the doing of his words. This is how it works. Think about this, please, for just a moment. Think about this not as a judicial decreed by Jesus. I'm not saying that Jesus won't be the judge and that these things won't matter most at the judgment. But what if Jesus' primary point here is, this is how life works. Your choice is to live this way and construct something that will stand, will serve you well, that you'll be glad you did at the end. Or you can ignore all of this. You can go your own way. You can take it the way the crowd does, the way the world thinks, or just the way you prefer. And you can live that way, but you can't escape what anger and lust and dishonesty and wrong treasure and hypocritical behavior and judgmental spirits and selfishness will do to you over time. Stop and think about the implication regarding who Jesus himself is. If he has the right to say, this is how life works. What did Paul mean in 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 11 when he said, other foundation can no man lay than that which is laid, Jesus Christ the Lord. He's not simply talking about hoping on him. This is a matter of life or death. This is how life works. Brother Bowles wrote a long time ago about this. He who hears the words of Jesus and does them is safe against all the evil influences of the world and safe forever. That's quite a statement. In Luke chapter 11 and verse 28, maybe 38, I'm not sure. Luke 11, 28, I think. Someone comes along and says, blessed is the womb that bore you, and so forth. And he said, blessed rather are those who hear the word of God and keep it. In James 1 and verse 25, his half-brother James said that a person who looks into the perfect law of liberty and then goes away and acts on what he sees there, that's the fellow who will be blessed in his doing. John says in 1 John 2 and verse 17 that the one who does the will of God abides even if the world passes away. So, do I really believe Jesus knows what he's talking about? The third question is then, am I actually doing what I've heard him say then? Am I making it my practice to conduct myself as he's been teaching? And if I'm not, and this is my question here, if I'm not, and if to any degree I'm not, then what's keeping me from it? Years ago, William Barclay, in a little book on the parables, actually, not on the Sermon on the Mount, but on the parables, made three little observations about what keeps us from living this way. that have stuck with me. He says, it may be that I have been reluctant to act at once. His point is simply that once words are heard and convictions are felt, it can get easier to delay obedience the more we're used to hearing that, so that the intention is dulled and finally I'm dead to what's been said. These words in the Sermon on the Mount that impress me so deeply when I first read them can be things I get used to and don't act on and therefore don't bother me anymore. Could that be happening to me? Or he says, it may be that I'll not take the trouble. That the kinds of things the Lord calls for here are things that seem really hard. At least that's in my experience. Have you found it hard to rule your anger and to go be reconciled? Have you found it hard to deal with your desire? Have you found it hard to deal with anxiety, for example? We all, you know, of course we do. So attending to things like this is often inconvenient. And I'm American. I'm an American. I don't want to be inconvenienced. You know, that may be a part of the problem. Or it may be that I'm unable to take the long view of things. I know what I want right this minute. And I'm going to have it right now how I feel, but I don't want to have to think about off down the road. You know, in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 18, Paul makes the point that the things that are seen are temporal. The things that are unseen are eternal. If I have an inability to look past the moment, I'm going to be ignoring the things that are most important of all. Fourth question now. Have I, in view of Jesus' teaching, have I prepared for the storms that are going to come? Am I being wise about where I'm constructing my character and what I'm doing with my opportunity? Remember now that the foolish man's house looks just fine until the storm settles over it and starts beating against it. I realize that only the storm can reveal whether I'm a hearer and a doer or whether I'm a counterfeit. You know, someone asked, well, what storms? And that's the point. Who knows what storms? They could be anything. Misunderstanding and disappointment, or temptation and doubt, or prosperity and pleasure. They're their own storms in a way. Or suffering and persecution, or mortality and judgment. I found a paragraph in a little 20th century Christian quarterly class book some time back that offers this observation. To choose a rock to build on was something that had to be done while the house was still a dream. Think of this now. Our characters become more Christ-like the more we're willing to be with Him. This time is born of discipline and of choice. Choosing the things that would change us into His image in the long run. They may not be exciting or quick, but the slow growth of spiritual values will ride out many storms. Am I willing to invest in the slow growth of spiritual values? If we would do this, if we would grow past the habit of just thinking in our lives of whether something is what we'll hear called a salvation issue, if we'd ask ourselves, is this really going to get me ready for the storm? Is this really going to make me a person who can stand? I've an idea we'd be different in a lot of ways. So think about the rock and the sand, the wise and the foolish, the life that lasts and the one that doesn't. Notice in the parable here, to not build is not an available choice. No storms is not a choice. The choices are stand or fall, rock or sand, wise or foolish, hear and do or hear and do not. They may not look like it to you, but those are the questions of a lifetime. What Jesus is doing in the Sermon on the Mount is giving us an opportunity to look to our own future. He's inviting us to go now and act this way. He's telling us to love as God Himself loves. The Sermon on the Mount is a statement of hope, if you and I can look at it in that way. And that's what makes it particularly sad and to me very sobering, to notice that the last words in this great, great section of teaching are, "It fell, and great was the fall of it." Doesn't that make you think, what a way to end the sermon? I like to end by trying to offer a word of encouragement and so forth. Jesus is pretty real about it, and great was the fall of it. May you and I not let that be said of our lives in the end. Of course, the sermon is followed by someone who gives himself up for us all, who wants the gospel of new life taught in his name, who invites us to believe that he's the Christ, to turn from sin and to be baptized into him, and then who begins to turn us into people who live like he's been teaching. If you're here today and needing to make that beginning, then please let us know by coming. We'd love to help if you'll come while we stand and sing.